Blog Talk Radio.
How you doing, everybody? Welcome to the Inspirational Talk Radio Network. Today, our guest is Joseph Max Lewis. Just a heads up, tomorrow night, or if you're listening on the archives, just check back on the archives tomorrow, July 14th, is Helping Hands Press Thursday Night Party. Patty J. Smith will be our guest here on the simulcast. Patty will be jumping in probably at the 15 to 20 minute mark in the show as we're going for a full hour. Let's bring Joseph Max Lewis in. Mr. Lewis, how you doing?
I'm not bad, G. Thanks for having me on again.
Awesome. Now, you got a lot going on. Besides having dropped Baghdad Burning a little bit ago, The Separation of Church and State, your first novel, The Diaries of Pontius Pilate, that has been optioned for film by the same folks that have done God's Not Dead. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, I sure can. Thanks for asking. It's pretty exciting, and it's also, we're an inspirational radio. As Christians, you sometimes have to, when one door is closed, another one opens. And I know you and I, we know each other personally. We've talked from time to time about, how you get the word out to folks about your books and let them know that it might be something that was that's interesting, a way to stand above the crowd or out from the crowd. And I had some things that were working for me, different techniques and things I was using, and suddenly they just stopped working, and I didn't know what I would talk to folks with the publishers, and I would check best-selling stats and things that I have access to through my author page in Amazon, and the old things weren't working. So I started doing a number of different things, trying to join some of the Christian book groups where they discussed different books, and just introducing myself and responding whenever whenever one of the moderators would give you the opportunity to introduce yourself and your work. And while I was doing that, in the process of trying to join these groups and figure out a new way to do things because the old way wasn't working, there was an email, a post, and it said, "Hello there, my name's Carrie Solomon. Me and my partner Chuck Kunzelman are the guys that co-wrote God's Not Dead. We're finishing up our second project after God's Not Dead, and we're wondering what we're going to do next. We figured it was a Christian book lovers forum. We figured this would be a good place to find some ideas or get some ideas. So if any of you have read a good book or you have an idea or something like that, well, you know what, G? I had a good book that I thought would work really well for a movie. So I sent Carrie, he gave his email address. I sent him an email address an email to that address with some information about my first book, The Diaries of Pontius Pilate. And I also responded to him within the book forum thing, although I was afraid that might get lost. But I thought the best thing to do would be to respond both ways. And after I didn't hear anything for a while, that was in early April, and after I didn't hear anything for a while, I sort of forgot about it. And one day when I was on my website's email, going through reader emails, and when you're a writer and when you're active on social media, you get an awful lot of kind of borderline spam stuff, and you just delete. So I'm going down, cleaning out the email list, and I saw Carrie, and it had no header on it. And I'm not going to get as dramatic as saying that, my finger was literally above the delete button or anything. But I looked at it and I thought, man, maybe I should just dump this. And I'm like, no, I have security software on here. I opened it up, and it was an email from Carrie Solomon, who is, one of the co-producers of God's Not Dead. He's the co-principal of Believe Entertainment. And he said, it sounds like an interesting concept. He said, I can't promise anything or anything like that, but we're interested, kind of like a Da Vinci Code for the good guys, He kind of laughed. And that started an email and telephone correspondence that basically it took almost a year. And finally, as we got to know each other and we went back and forth, and then we brought Chuck Kunzelman in on a conference call, and eventually they decided to, you know, make me an offer for an option, and I gladly accepted, and we, you know, exchanged the letters of intent, and we're continuing to work through some stuff. Actually, I got an email from them today talking about some different things. So that's sort of the short version, believe it or not. I've been talking for a while. It's actually the short version of what happened. It's pretty exciting, I have to say.
Thanks. Everybody, you're listening to Joseph Max Lewis on Inspirational Talk Radio Network. And Joseph Max Lewis is talking about the Diaries of Pontius Pilate. Excuse me. Now, for those who don't know, if you go on Amazon right now, the Diaries of Pontius Pilate is a Kindle Unlimited deal. And it is, if you're not a Kindle Unlimited customer, you can get it for 99 cents right now because of the promotion. This is a thriller, suspense, espionage type thing. Can you give the folks a little bit of background? You alluded to like the Da Vinci Code type of thing. Can you tell folks what the Diaries of Pontius Pilate is about and what really piqued the interest of the movie folks?
Yeah, I'd be glad to. Diaries of Pontius Pilate supposes that Pontius Pilate found out, you know, most Christians in the Bible is convinced that after Jesus Christ was crucified and died for our sins, that the Jewish temple authorities obtained a guard or convinced Pilate to put a guard on Jesus' tomb, so that his disciples couldn't steal the body. And when Christ was resurrected on the third day, those Roman soldiers witnessed it and basically ran away. And then they were bribed by the Jewish officials to say that they fell asleep or, you know, for whatever reason, the disciples were able to steal the body away. The Diaries of Pontius Pilate assumes that Pilate found out about that, about Roman soldiers being bribed by the political and religious authorities of an occupied power. Well, it's a pretty big deal. So he investigated the allegations of bribery and corruption of his men. He ended up conducting a year-long criminal investigation. He interviewed the soldiers. He checked out the tomb. He examined physical evidence, interviewed apostles, interviewed a number of people, and at the end of this year-long criminal investigation, he became convinced that Jesus Christ was the Son of God, and he did become, rise from the dead, and Pilate transcribed the results of his criminal investigation, everything, the interviews, the examination of the shroud, the tomb, all the physical evidence onto 20 copper scrolls. Then there is a bad guy conspiracy called the Society of Human Enlightenment, which attempted to steal those scrolls because they wanted to eradicate any proof of Jesus' resurrection. Pilate managed to sneak them out of his winter palace before it was attacked, and they were hidden and they lay buried for 2,000 years. The beginning point of the novel is when two archaeologists discover the scrolls, and then the same conspiracy that attacked Pilate has existed for all this time. Again, you know, similar to the Da Vinci Code, of course, but a centuries-long conspiracy learns that these scrolls have been discovered, and they're determined to stamp to destroy them and destroy anyone who has any knowledge of the scrolls or what they contain. That's when, you know, the novel starts. There's an attack on the camp, and after that, there's good guys, bad guys, chases across the desert, gunfights, tramp steamers, an awful lot of stuff that I like to think is pretty exciting, and it seems like Chuck and Carrie did too, and they thought that it would, you know, translate well to the screen. So that's the basic premise of the novel, G.
So some of it is current, contemporary, and some of it is historical.
Yeah, that's, and I'm glad you brought that up because that has thrown a couple, you know, I mean, they say you should never read your own press, but I have to admit I read my readers' reviews and oftentimes try and incorporate some things that they say or maybe criticisms that they have into the next novel to improve my craft. One of the things that that a few writers, not a lot, but a few readers have said is they wondered whether or not it would be a historical novel. No, it is not. The novel opens on current day along the shores of the Dead Sea. And we discover, as the story progresses, we discover, along with the two archaeologists who discover the scrolls, Kevin and Jill, we discover the information, the so-called backstory that I just related to you, as they do, as they're in the process of discovering the scrolls, finding themselves under attack, escaping into the desert. They discover this bit by bit by bit, as we do, and they start to figure out what's happening and why it's happening to them.
Intense. Now, when you talk about reviews, this particular novel, The Diaries of Pontius Pilate, on Amazon has 65 reviews. The average of those reviews is 4.5 stars out of 5. That you have nothing lower than a 3-star review. 6% are three stars. 57% is 5 stars. 37% is 4 stars. So I'd have to say you hit the nail on the head right out the gate. The reviews
are
long.
Yeah, thanks. There are some really, really good reviews. And on Goodreads, it's kind of frustrating. I try to get my folks to post on not just on Goodreads, but also on which is a website and community site for readers, but also on Amazon because a lot of readers that maybe only buy 2 or 3 books a year rely heavily on Amazon. But there's 200. I have 200 ratings. Well. Almost maybe 199, 200 on Goodreads right now as well, and I'd love to get the folks to put them, you know, to translate them. But I would say the ratings and the types of reviews are pretty similar to what's on Amazon. You know, when you get that number, there's not really much variation. You find that statistically it stays pretty good. The other thing that's interesting is, from the start, probably every 4th or 5th review I would get, not just a rating, but a review, would have a reader saying this would make a great movie, that they could see it being a movie. So looking at it in hindsight, now that, you know, I have an option for the movie, it's kind of, it's kind of ironic and encouraging, you know.
I would say so. I mean, you have a lot going on there with all of it. Why did he write on copper? What was the what's the deal with the copper?
Oh, it is something that was done. One of the, as I was thinking about this story and in deciding how to create it, that was one of the one of the stumbling blocks for believability is, you know, if you put it on a papyrus or something like that, over hundreds and hundreds of years, it's going to deteriorate. Well, I read a novel by a guy named Joel Rosenberg called The Copper Scroll and learned from him and then independently confirmed it that in ancient days, information was recorded on copper scrolls. And the way it was done is the copper was created, and then it was, hammered into thin pieces that could be kind of like a scroll, and information was etched upon the copper. It was the most permanent way, short of, stone monuments, where they would chisel into stone monuments, which of course you couldn't do a book or a listing or records, but information was etched by scribes into the softer copper material so as to preserve it as long as possible. It was infrequent. It wasn't done, it wasn't something that was done commonly. Of course, a lot of people couldn't read back then, but it was something that was done. And once I learned that, it was, sort of like the eureka moment. I knew the story would work. I knew it would be believable. I knew people would, you know, stay with the story and not be thrown out of it because it was unbelievable.
Yeah, I can understand it. It's a normal person, the average person, would not be using copper just because of the cost. And
right.
Unless he was doing commandments, he didn't want to use stone, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and even then there's only 10, you know, so yeah, space starts to become a limitation.
But that would have been pretty wild if Pilate was walking around with two tablets with commandments on them. That would have been a little different.
I don't think people would have bought that, so I had to go with the copper.
Okay, then I can see that. All right, you're on the Inspirational Talk Radio Network. We're talking to Joseph Max Lewis about his different projects, especially The Diaries of Pontius Pilate, his first novel that he released. Now, you also have two other novels associated with the same characters. Separation of Church and State is a follow-up to The Diaries of Pontius Pilate, but then you do a prequel with Baghdad Burning. Tell us about Separation of Church and State, if you would, please.
Yeah, Separation of Church and State, like you, as you pointed out, is the next sequential novel after The Diaries of Pontius Pilate, and there are, for lack of a better way of putting it, cameos by some of the characters in the first novel, the main characters in the first novel and Diaries, but you're introduced to a new protagonist. You still have the Society for Human Enlightenment, which is the ancient conspiracy, which, I mean, essentially it's a conspiracy of power and domination and evil even. I think readers, you know, after someone's read, they would conclude that. And a newer, sort of an ad hoc, making it up as they go along, conspiracy, for lack of a better word, called the Fellowship, which is a loose alliance of folks that are Christians and see a need to defend the faith and defend Christians, individual Christians, from some of the persecution that's taking part in the world. Those two conspiracies or groups are at odds. One is trying, the society is trying to essentially corrupt some political institutions in the United States so as to do bad things, for a lack of a better way to put it, without trying to give away too much of the story. And the Fellowship of the Essentials tries to assist individuals who find themselves caught up in the conflict to escape and survive, and in some cases thrive. So both Diaries and Separation have normal people who certainly have their strengths and their weaknesses, but they find themselves thrown into almost impossible situations. But the common theme with both of them, with actually all of them, is they don't give up. They keep trying. They manage to make it. I'll give away that much. They manage to make it, although often not without loss. As some of my readers know, it is necessary sometimes to kill off a quite likable character, because sometimes that's what happens in real life when there is conflict situations. You know, good people die. So Separation revolves around a political conspiracy. If Diaries of Pontius Pilate revolves around an attempt to suppress definitive evidence of Jesus Christ's death and resurrection, Separation of Church and State revolves around the conspiracy to corrupt American political institutions in a way that will either suppress or destroy Christianity in the United States. It's set in the future. It's not anything that's happening now. I'm not saying that. It's a fictional story that's set in the future. Baghdad Burning, as you pointed out, is a prequel, and it's a good story all on its own. It does not involve the Society for Human Enlightenment or the Fellowship. It does show us the personality and the personal development and the history of a couple important characters in diaries and separation of church and state. One, the most important one is Ted Kerr, but also Hank Jenkins, who is a CIA agent, and it introduces us to a new character who is going to be very important in the fourth or fifth novel. I'm not sure what it's going to be yet. A guy named Ralph Jackson, who is a military veteran who finds himself in Baghdad, assigned to Iraq's first female judge, who finds herself in a real political conflict between two opposing, very powerful forces. And she's trying to do the right thing. Both of those forces are trying to get her to do the wrong thing, and Ralph tries to help her. So those are the three. Those are the three novels. Baghdad Burning is a contemporary political and military thriller. Diaries of Pontius Pilate is a conspiracy thriller that revolves around the crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Separation of Church and State involves an attempt by the Society for Human Enlightenment to corrupt American political institutions. And I'm working on the next one. So, and then, of course, I have some short stories I did in conjunction with other Helping Hands Press authors and a few standalones of my own. But that's where the state of things are right now, G.
Awesome. Really, we're talking to Joseph Max Lewis, author of a number of novels for on the Inspirational Talk Radio Network. Now, looking at your bio, I just wanted to mention, everybody, if you want to connect with Joseph on his website, just go to www.josephmaxlewis.com. You can go on Amazon. All the information is right there. Reading your bio, I mean, you're talking about different points in history, also the Middle East, things like that. You were a Green Beret. You did receive anti-terrorist training, and it says here your detachment was tasked to special projects. I'm assuming that wasn't like trying to make fortresses out of like popsicle sticks and stuff. It was a little something different than that.
It was not that.
Is that what you guys were doing? You were playing with like popsicle sticks and stuff and making things?
Yeah, there are popsicles involved.
That's
if
cool.
We were good.
But it says here you did time in Israel. You went to University of Tel Aviv in Israel, and you were first in the Middle East and in Southeast Asia. Just a side question, because Southeast Asia is mentioned in your bio. Do you have any? It seems like you hit the nail pretty hard with the terrorism and what's going on politically in the Middle East because of your time served in Southeast Asia and what's going on over there, because that is very relevant material. Do you see any of your characters traveling over there, or maybe coming up with a new set of characters, a new new band of brothers that will do stuff in Southeast Asia?
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that. One of the things I'm doing right now is I've been promising my readers for about a year and a half a short story prequel for Christmas that sort of shows people how Ted Kerr got involved in the Fellowship of the Essentials. And that is going to revolve around some things in Southeast Asia. So, exactly. You're exactly right.
Is the bad guy short of stature with a bad haircut?
Man, they come in all shapes, sizes, and forms. That's the tricky part, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, as an author, is it important for you to have a really good bad guy? I had this discussion with a bunch of people around a fire over the holiday weekend, and we were talking about one of the movie franchises that's been going on since the early 60s. And my biggest beef with it, maybe the last four or five movies, is that the bad guy wasn't good enough. He wasn't like I like a likable bad guy. He's either his ego is too big or he's too stupid, but he's a good bad guy. I mean, you kind of root for the bad guy, even though you know the good guy is going to win. Do you think that's important in any of these types of novels, or do you think that with the thriller suspense and the way that things are today, especially with coverage of the Middle East and terrorism, that things are pretty much cut and dried? How do you approach that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm not really sure. because to a certain extent, my stories develop on their own. I think that for me, the bad guys, I have been around long enough in the military. I've traveled enough. I spent over 2 years as a public defender working in criminal courts and dealing with some really bad people. And I have learned, and I have no qualms about the fact that some people are just really bad and they like being bad. For lack of a way of putting it, I was telling someone about a similar situation, having a similar discussion on what you talked about. There are people, and I have met these people and dealt with them and interacted with them. These are people that would find something. It's not a question of stealing your money or doing something that would benefit them. If they had a chance to break something that you had inherited and was very dear to you, they would think it was funny. They would enjoy it just for the sake of doing it. And sometimes you tell people that and they don't believe it had to be something in their childhood or, you know, you need to develop their character a little bit more. And you certainly need to give your bad guy characteristics, strengths, and weaknesses. But I don't – and occasionally some of my characters are merely weak or they have ulterior motives for why they do things that they shouldn't do. But my bad guys are – they're bad. They like it. They enjoy it. They have a different, completely different worldview than you and I do. And those people exist because I've seen them, G. I've interacted with them. So that's maybe a little bit more than you wanted. You know, maybe I answered more than what you you asked. But that's my attitude toward bad guys.
Oh, that's okay. I like it. That's good. With the movie, just going back to our earlier conversation, how much input are you going to have over this? Is this something where they're purchasing your work and they're pretty much running with it, or do you have any input on it at all?
I think they're going to let me have my say, and that's what I asked them. Well, first, legally, they can do pretty much whatever they want. As far as our discussions and my feel for them and how they're willing to interact with me, they will let me make my case. When they're done with the screenplay, I will be able to, you know, say, hey, you know, wouldn't it be better to put this in and leave that out? Or where you cut this, maybe you shouldn't have cut the whole thing. And they're willing to hear me out. You know, it's not just like, hey, you just be quiet and, you know, we're doing the screenplay now. So it will not be that. But in the end, and this is what I said to them, and it is my attitude. I'm a novelist. I'm not a movie maker, you know. If they would say something to me about the novel, well, you shouldn't have done this in the novel or whatever, I would push back. But if they say to me, these are guys that have made, and not just God's Not Dead, God's Not Dead 2, Do You Believe, very multi-million dollar successes in the inspirational space. They also had a successful secular career before they really committed to, making more Christian-themed dramas. I don't know what they know, and I'm just going to have to bite my lip and let the movie makers be movie makers. So, again, probably a longer answer than, you know, the yes, but the short answer is they're going to let me have my say, but they're going to do what they want in the end.
Awesome. You think Kevin Sorbo could be in this?
I don't know. You know, I ran a contest for my readers as to, you know, who should play different versions. I suggested there's an Israeli police inspector that's in the Diaries of Pontius Pilate, and none of my readers matched. The contest was everybody submits who they thought for certain characters in the book, and it was no one, and all they had to do was hit one. I said whoever hits the most matches the most that I pick for the characters, wins. And, you know, there were some prize. I mean, no, not a million bucks or anything, but they got some books. I sent them some autograph books. No one matched me. Hardly, no one matched anybody else either. But when I said that I thought Vin Diesel should be Inspector Moshe Aarons and posted that on the Facebook, because I had to post the results, that got a very good response from readers. They thought that that would
be
good.
I love his voice.
So. Yeah,
I love Vin Diesel's voice.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, I do too. I think he'd be a good Inspector Aarons. So I don't know whether Kevin Sorbo, I don't know who's going to, you know, I guess part of it's going to depend on how big the budget is. But these guys are getting a number of successes under their belt that they're starting to pull in some, you know, some named actors.
Yeah, I made some, both those movies made some major scratch.
Yeah, yeah. Especially the first one, man. Gee, many Christmas. I mean, I haven't checked on the second one lately, but God's Not Dead, I mean, they made that for like $1 million. And the last time I checked it, I had over $100 million in, you know, grow the box and then foreign sales and stuff like that. And it's still, you know, my wife and I bought it for Christmas. And that was almost 2 years ago. Or excuse me, that was almost 2 years after the movie was made. And that, so that's still money coming in. So, yeah, they know what they're doing, man.
I don't think there was any explosions in God's Not Dead. We need a lot of gunfire and explosions. So they're going to have to up the budget a little.
It's funny you say that, because that's one of the things that Carrie said to me when we were talking. He said, you know what, they're great movies, but he said, you know, I can't remember the exact words he used, but the bottom line was, he said, you know, you want to have more variety in Christian film than just sort of, you know, a drama that centers around a challenge to someone's faith. Which is what God's Not Dead and God's Not Dead 2 are. And they're great. They're great movies. They are. They're great movies. But so Diaries is something that's very different. I mean, like you said, good guys, bad guys, gunfights, explosions, there's all that. So good Lord willing, you know.
Yeah, so if they can find a happy medium between God's Not Dead and The Expendables, that would be amazing.
I like to think that's where I'm at. But we'll see.
That would make me extremely happy. So that would work. I've seen God's Not Dead. I haven't seen the second one. I've seen the first one. I don't go to movie theaters much, so I wait for wherever, if it streams or if I can get it from the library or Redbox.
I think it's coming out pretty soon. I'm like you. The older I get, the less and less I want to go to a movie theater or a concert hall or something. I'd just rather do it at home. You know?
Oh, no. I wouldn't mind seeing it in the theater, but for me, the experience isn't as much as good as other people. It's I found a theater that I can wear glasses and it has subtitles, but the problem is it's not like subtitles on a TV. Like, you know, they're at the bottom. These glasses have subtitles, like, in the middle of the glasses. So if I'm looking at the screen, it could be in the middle of somebody's face, the words. You know what I mean? So it's kind of hard for me to focus on both.
Yeah,
it's a little different.
Okay.
The other theaters, they just give you a pair of earmuffs and they magnify the sound. That doesn't work for me. So I really got to pick and choose what I see at the movie theater. It's a little better for me at home. Yeah. So that's a concert, yeah, I'm in for that. And in fact, I'm going to see kids for Father's Day. Got my tickets to go see Springsteen at
good for you.
Citizens Bank Park. Yeah, I never saw Springsteen live. So,
no,
I'm looking forward
either.
To that. Yeah, I saw Hall & Oates on Yahoo Sunday night, and I was disappointed. So very disappointed.
I haven't gone to a concert.
I was bummed. Yeah, they didn't play that long. Well, not like they normally play. I've seen them live twice, three times. It was cut short. I don't know why. I don't know if it was a constraint by Yahoo or if it was a thing at the venue, because the concert actually started at 7 and they came on at 9. I don't know if they only had a certain amount of time they could play or what. I don't know. All right. Side note. I'll get away from that. I want to thank you for being on today. Everybody, Joseph Max Lewis, author of The Diaries of Pontius Pilate, Separation of Church and State, and Baghdad Burning. You can find all these on Amazon. And don't forget, The Diaries of Pontius Pilate is a Kindle Unlimited deal. Or if you're not a Kindle Unlimited customer on Amazon, you can get it for 99 cents. So I want to thank you for being on Just Max Lewis. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you, G.
Total pleasure. Tomorrow night, everybody, here on the Inspirational Talk Radio Network at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we have Helping Hands Press Thursday Night Party. Our featured guest will be Molly Genre author Patty J. Smith. She'll come on with us for listening tomorrow night or on the archives at around the 8:15, 8:20 mark. So 15 or 20 minutes into the show, Patty J. Smith will be joining us. And I want to thank everybody for listening in. And if you enjoyed this, please share it with a friend. Have a great day, everybody. And don't forget, if you want more from Joseph Max Lewis, go to www.josephmaxlewis.com. Have an awesome day, everybody. Bye-bye.